Chapter 22. Other Hotspots. No place in the world, other than perhaps Dulce, has experienced the sheer range of bizarre experiences that have been reported at the Skinwalker Ranch. Certainly, few other reputed hotspots have been subjected to the same level of intense, long-term scientific observation as has the ranch. That said, there are a handful of other locations where similar phenomena have been reported over the years, places where the sightings of unexplained aerial objects are but a small part of a larger and stranger picture. If there is a lesson to be learned or a pattern to be discerned from what has occurred at the Gorman Ranch, perhaps there are clues in the experiences of other families who have encountered the unknown. On the eastern slopes of the Cascade Mountains in south-central Washington, residents have been reporting odd aerial objects for generations. Native American legends extend the stories back for hundreds of years. One particular region, composed of 2,800 square miles of thick forests, farms, and the Yakima Indian Reservation, is regarded as one of the most consistent UFO hotspots in North America. So many unexplained nocturnal lights and mystery aircraft were reported by residents in the late 1960s and early 1970s that a formal study was initiated at the request of J. Allen Hynek, the former Northwestern University astronomer who had served as chief civilian investigator for Project Blue Book, the U.S. Air Force study of UFOs that was formally terminated in 1969. The so-called Toppenish study of UFOs in the area near the Yakima Reservation was conducted by Hynek's associates in 1972, was updated in 1974 and 1975, and most recently was revised in 1995. The investigators documented dozens of UFO sightings and close encounters. The people who live on or near the Yakima Reservation didn't need a study to tell them that something strange had been going on in their sky. Investigators, then and now, say they are hard-pressed to find anyone in the region who hasn't seen a UFO. Personnel stationed in fire control towers say the sightings of orange balls of light became so routine that they would scarcely report them. Police officers, ranchers, government employees, and everyday citizens have seen not only orange balls of light that seem capable of performing impossible aerial maneuvers, but also aircraft larger than jumbo jets that witnesses say could stop in midair, perform U-turns or zigzag patterns, then zoom away in the blink of an eye. But in central Washington, as in northeastern Utah, the strangest events occurred on the ground, not in the sky. Writer Greg Long, whose book, Examining the Earthlight Theory, chronicles decades of UFO activity near the Yakima Reservation, found a ranching family whose experiences mirror those of the Gormans to a remarkable degree. Like the Gormans, the Smith family chose to live in a rural farming and ranching community. The fertile farmland near the Yakima Reservation is known for its corn, sugar beets, apples, and timber, as well as for the quiet country lifestyle that comes with the territory. Bill Smith, his wife Susan, along with their son and daughter, moved onto their property in 1966. It wasn't until 1969 that the family experienced its first paranormal event on the farm. Susan Smith says she heard the family's dogs throwing a fit. She responded and saw that the animals were barking ferociously at a boy who was walking along the road in front of the farm. The boy appeared to be Hispanic or Indian, was wearing blue jeans and a blue shirt, and made no sound. As he walked along, he passed behind a tree on the edge of the property, but he never reemerged on the other side of the tree. After a few minutes, Susan ran to check on him, thinking he might have tripped or otherwise hurt himself. The boy wasn't there. He had simply vanished. Susan was so upset by the strangeness of the encounter that she ordered the tree to be cut down. Family members began to hear disembodied voices of men, women, and children. At times, the voices spoke perfect English. Other times, the language was unknown to family members. They described it as guttural. On one occasion, Bill and Susan returned home from dinner and heard the voices of little girls inside the house. The mystery girls sounded as if they were at play, laughing and giggling. As soon as Bill and Susan stepped into the house, The voices stopped. Bill recalls the night he heard a loud male voice that sounded as if it was coming from right outside his bedroom window. The voice proceeded to describe the physical characteristics and exact location of everyone inside the house. When Bill went to the window to peer out, the voice stopped. No person could be seen outside, and the family's usually alert watchdogs failed to notice any intruders. In addition to the voices, the family grew accustomed to hearing strange noises, including the sounds of footsteps inside the house, bumps and bangs on the walls and on the porch, a frequent electronic beeping noise that would come and go with no apparent source, and a hammering sound that persisted for more than a year. Bill described the sound as that of a metallic post driver hammering a post over and over into the ground. The sound usually began around dusk and would persist intermittently, sometimes until dawn. It seemed to emanate from above the ground and was heard by others who visited the farm. Whenever Bill or another family member would go out to investigate, the hammering would stop, only to start again 15 minutes later. Each family member, as well as visitors to the property, reported a number of poltergeist-type events. Knives propelled themselves out of frying pans, appliances jumped off hooks, and doors opened and closed of their own volition. Heavy objects mysteriously repositioned themselves. Tools disappeared, then reappeared in the same spot minutes later. A family friend, who volunteered to help dig a ditch, said he was repeatedly approached in broad daylight by what appeared to be the shadow of a man. Shadowy legs would walk up to where he was working and just stand there. The friend, understandably, was spooked and left the property. During the years when all of these other events were unfolding, the family repeatedly experienced a range of UFO-type encounters. Almost from the beginning, the family saw weird lights nearby. Sometimes the balls of light were yellow, ringed by an orange rim. Other times, the flying balls were red-orange. In most cases, they appeared to be intelligently controlled. On a few occasions, the property was flooded with an intense light that seemed to emanate from the sky, although no source could be seen. In the summer of 1972, the family had perhaps its most spectacular UFO sighting. A brilliant light, described as brighter than the sun, seemed suspended above the Smiths' cornfields. The light would dim for a few seconds, then move a few hundred feet, then become more intense again. At one point, when it dimmed, Bill was able to see the source, a large, zeppelin-like craft that he estimated to be the length of 3 boxcars. The airship was the color of oxidized lead, like an old battleship, and the family could see what appeared to be a row of portals in the side. The craft had no wings, fins, rudders, or obvious form of propulsion as it silently traveled over the cornfields at a speed of 35 miles per hour. Bill had a fleeting thought to grab both his rifle and a Polaroid camera, but says he received a telepathic message that the object had the family in its sights, and that it would be foolish to take any hostile action. Bill froze and touched neither the gun nor the camera. It was his impression that the message had come from some type of advanced intelligence aboard the airship. One day, they found evidence that something landed on one of the lawns. The grass was crushed in a rectangle 5 feet long and 2 feet wide. Something else alighted on the family's automobiles on 2 occasions, leaving behind a weird pattern of circular markings as if someone on crutches had walked on the hood and sides of the vehicles. Because of the family's request for anonymity, it isn't known whether the Smiths still live on the property or whether these occurrences are ongoing. Investigators who have pursued the case have few solid ideas about what was behind the strange series of events. The similarities to the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah are numerous. A rural family of 4 experienced both UFO and poltergeist-type events over a long period of time for no apparent reason or motive, and in the vicinity of a Native American tribal community. The events seem to have been orchestrated by some intelligence. This intelligence seemed to react to the emotional states of the family members. While the farm property appeared to be the epicenter of the strange events, there were many other manifestations that were witnessed and reported by other residents of the region. A remote ranch in rural Colorado was the site of events that even more strikingly resemble the activities at the Skinwalker Ranch. Once again, Investigators have withheld exact details about the location of this ranch and the identities of the witnesses, but enough is known about this case to draw obvious comparisons. The case was originally investigated by a team associated with the now-defunct Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, one of the leading UFO investigative groups of the 1960s and 1970s. Investigators included Leo Sprinkle, a psychologist from the University of Wyoming, anthropologist Peter Van Arsdale, and seismologist John Dare. Popular British UFO researcher Timothy Good publicized the results of their investigation in his 1991 book, Alien Contact. According to Good, the principal witnesses were a husband and wife named John and Barbara, their teenage sons, and family friend Jim, a former U.S. Air Force security officer. John, Barbara, and Jim pooled their resources to purchase a somewhat run-down ranch that had been vacant for some years. The property contains grazing pastures, wooded areas, and natural springs, and is said to be located in the general vicinity of ongoing military operations, although the name of the base has never been made public. Over a period of 4 years, family members experienced a wide range of bizarre and frightening occurrences. It began with strange noises and electronic humming sounds that had no apparent source. The family came to associate the humming noise with UFOs. UFO sightings became almost commonplace on the ranch. In one dramatic instance, the witnesses say, a fleet of 9 flying saucers landed in front of the ranch house. They also saw other craft of varying shapes and sizes floating silently past the property, both during the day and at night. Family members say they frequently heard the sounds of heavy footsteps in and around the ranch house as if the place was haunted. In October 1975, the family's teenage sons came across the remains of a cow that had been mutilated. They also spotted huge footprints that they later learned were made by a Bigfoot-type creature that was spotted on or near the property several times. The footprints suggested that the creature had followed the teenagers back from the woods after their discovery of the mutilated cow. After a second animal mutilation on the ranch, Jim went to town to discuss the situation with lawmen. The deputy he contacted told him that there had been hundreds of mutilations in the area and that there was no reason to investigate them all since they were likely carried out by extraterrestrials. Colorado, it should be noted, is where the first publicized animal mutilations occurred. Hundreds, perhaps thousands, of cases have been documented in the state, and they continue to this day. Jim was unwilling to accept the explanation offered by the lawman. He and the others began to suspect some sort of military involvement in light of the ranch's proximity to assorted military activities. For a time, they also theorized that an unscrupulous real estate agent might have been sabotaging their ranch operation as a way to force them to sell the property. In time, they would discard both of these suspicions. The Bigfoot sightings continued. In one instance, a large, hairy humanoid pushed its way through a barbed wire fence and chased after family members who ran into the house. They returned later and found not only 18-inch footprints, but also a tuft of hair on the wire, hair that was tested by a Denver biologist who could not identify the species. Another time, Jim saw one of the hairy humanoids running beside the corral, and he shot it with his rifle. He says he definitely hit his target. But the creature barely flinched. He found no blood or other trace at the spot of the shooting. When he chased after it, he heard a weird sound that resembled a soft whine combined with an electronic beeping noise. Jim reported the shooting incident to law enforcement, which severely chastised him for using his gun. In addition to family members, a total of 20 witnesses claimed to have seen the Bigfoot creatures at the ranch, including friends, visitors, and employees. There were other sorts of intrusions as well. At times, family members found themselves paralyzed, unable to move. Barbara was knocked unconscious by a powerful and unseen force as she peered out the window at UFOs floating in front of the house. After coming home one night to find the children huddled in fear, Jim ran out into the yard and yelled a threat to blow up the property, arguing to the unseen intelligence that if his family couldn't have the property, then no one would have it. He says a response came in the form of a clear, loud voice in what he described as stereophonic sound that told him, "Dr. Jim, we accept." The telepathic truce didn't last, however. Family members witnessed humanoid figures clothed in tight-fitting suits on the property. On one night, Jim awoke to find a nearly 7-foot-tall being in a spacesuit, complete with cosmonaut helmet, standing beside his bed. The being vanished before his eyes. Jim went to his lawman friend and talked about moving the teenagers off the property because they might be in physical danger. The lawman reportedly counseled him that while the phenomenon had sliced up cattle and other animals and had certainly frightened residents of the area, no physical harm had ever come to any humans. Another incident occurred one midnight as the family entertained a few out-of-town guests. All lights in the house went out. The group was gathered around a stereo and had been listening to the phonograph. When the power went off, a voice emanated from every speaker in the place, the stereo as well as the television. The voice told the group, "We have allowed you to remain. We have interfered with your lives very little. Do not cause us to take action, which you will regret. Your friends will be instructed to remain silent about us." One of the guests, an electronics expert, dismantled the stereo, determined to find out how this could have happened. The radio receiver had been off when the voice was heard. Only the phonograph was being used. The electronics expert was baffled. He speculated that some sort of transmitter might have been used, but such a transmitter would have had to be incredibly powerful and sophisticated. The most dramatic episode occurred in January 1977. Jim felt a compulsion to travel to the top of a hill on the property. John's oldest son accompanied him. Months earlier, the hilltop had been burned by something that left a charred 35-foot circle where nothing would grow. Once the duo arrived on the hilltop, they noticed a yellowish light in the trees. When they approached the light, they saw that its source was a metallic box. The box emitted a humming noise. Jim advised the teenager to stand back as he walked toward the box. When he got within a few feet, the humming sound changed to a louder, angrier tone, something akin to a swarm of enraged bees. Jim cautiously decided to walk the teenager back to the car, which was a short distance away. When he returned seconds later, the box was gone. Jim's lawman friend later recounted his own encounter with a similar box that he spotted under a tree. Rather than approach it alone, he returned to the office and brought a fellow deputy back to the spot. Not only had the box disappeared, but so had the tree. Jim's hilltop mystery didn't end with the disappearing box. Later that same night, he saw another light in the trees. He sent the boy back to the house for safety, then went to investigate. When he arrived at the source of the light, he saw two men whom he described as short, almost effeminate, with large eyes and blonde hair, and wearing what appeared to be tight-fitting flight suits. 60 feet down the hill, a dimly lit flying saucer rested on the ground, and in the shadows stood a Bigfoot creature. "How nice of you to come," the strangers reportedly exclaimed in perfect English. Jim says his encounter lasted about 5 minutes. According to Timothy Good, the strangers apologized to Jim for the inconveniences they had caused and assured him that a more equitable arrangement would be worked out. They told him several other things that he found to be insignificant, but insisted that he should not repeat any of it. Jim had many questions, but didn't ask any. He says he advised the strangers that the mutilations of animals might be unwise, since it might draw too much attention to their presence, but they declined to admit any involvement with the mutilations. The strangers reportedly demonstrated their control of the Bigfoot creature by ordering it to pick up the blinking box. When it touched the box, the huge beast dropped to the ground. The strangers then emphasized that contact with the box could be lethal. The two strangers stated that Jim's memory would not be tampered with, implying that they had the power to do so if they wished. They said that they would return to talk again. Jim felt it was time to go and walked back toward the house, his head spinning. He wondered if they were going to give him the cure for cancer or $1 billion, and he pondered what might be meant by a more equitable arrangement. He was not convinced that they were space aliens and remembers thinking that somehow the government was behind the whole thing. The possibility of military involvement isn't without some foundation. During the period of the cattle mutilations, the family often saw military-type helicopters flying over the property. Jim believes that the helicopters he saw were too small to have carried out the mutilations because, he reasoned, whoever was responsible most likely hoisted the heavy animals into the air to perform the surgeries, then deposited the carcasses on the ground. In his estimation, small helicopters couldn't lift a 2,700-pound bull. His curiosity was further aroused when he called the nearby military base to complain about helicopters that sometimes landed on his property. During his conversation with the colonel, Jim says he was asked what he thought about the cattle mutilations. The question seemed to come from out of the blue. Jim offered the opinion that perhaps UFOs were responsible. The colonel then admitted, in an amazing burst of candor, that the base was having its own problems with UFO intrusions. The colonel then asked if Jim had filed any complaints about his Bigfoot sightings. The officer confided that base personnel had received strict security instructions about how they should deal with both UFO incidents and Bigfoot sightings. Such a conversation, if it happened, would seem to violate any number of military protocols. At least one critic of this case has argued that this odd, off-the-cuff chat strongly suggests that the officer was playing along with some sort of psychological exercise, mind game, or disinformation effort. The team of APRO investigators told Tim Good that they believed the witnesses were being truthful in their description of these events. Psychologist Leo Sprinkle said he was initially skeptical of the case, but that he viewed the principal witnesses to be reliable and sincere. The other investigators agreed with this assessment. If it was all a mass hallucination, its long duration and daunting complexity would certainly put the entire affair in unique company. While Tim Good and the original investigators have declined to make public any specific information about the location of the ranch, an article on the internet sheds some light on the case. The paper, UFOs, The Military Unmasked, was written in French by researcher Emmanuel Dellinger in 2003. It identifies the location of the ranch as Elbert County, a sparsely populated area southeast of Denver. Descriptions offered on the official Elbert County website seem consistent with what is known about the ranch. The 2,000-square-mile county, home to a mere 22,254 people in 2003, is known for its ranches, farms, abundant wildlife, and sleepy country charm. What Elbert County doesn't have, though, is a military base. That said, Elbert County abuts El Paso County, which is home to three large military installations, including Peterson Air Force Base, the hub of the USAF Space Command operations, home to the 21st Space Wing, which is the sole organization within the USAF responsible for worldwide missile warnings and space control operations. The U.S. Army's Air, Space, and Missile Defense Program is also headquartered there. What's more, Peterson AFB's elite Team 21 works directly with NORAD's Cheyenne Mountain Complex in protecting the United States from any intrusion or potential threat from the sky. When the residents of the ranch said that they had a vantage point from which they could observe military operations, could they have been talking about activities on test ranges controlled by Peterson AFB? According to Jim, the military base he contacted was well aware of UFO incidents, animal mutilations, even Bigfoot sightings on the ranch. The colonel's astonishing and somewhat cavalier acknowledgement of these bizarre episodes led writer Emmanuel Dellinger to suggest that the military had orchestrated the entire saga. Dellinger's paper argues that a covert military agency conducted a psychological manipulation of the witnesses by using electromagnetic waves somehow to induce hallucinations as well as to manipulate electrical devices. Dellinger thinks a combination of advanced hypnosis and costumed actors may have convinced the ranch family that their encounters with the assorted beings were real. And Dellinger argues that an artificial luminous projection system, perhaps based on plasma technology, could have been used to create the many UFO sightings. Why would anyone go to so much trouble to scare the hell out of one unfortunate family? Dellinger thinks the military wanted to take control of the property because it overlooked a strategic range that was being used by the Air Force. Sure enough, in 1979, the family gave up, sold the ranch, and moved away. Similar suggestions have been made about the Utah ranch, that a covert military group created an elaborate melodrama in order to seize control of the property for whatever reason, And, as we know, the Gormans did move. But the most glaring weakness with such an argument is that the military has no need for an incredibly sophisticated, long-lasting, and undoubtedly expensive charade. If the Pentagon determines that a particular piece of real estate is needed for strategic security or intelligence reasons, it can simply seize the land and deal with the consequences later. Such is the case with Nevada's infamous military base known as Area 51. In the mid-1980s, the U.S. Air Force commandeered 80,000 acres of public land adjacent to the base in order to create a larger buffer zone. Armed security forces were positioned around the previously accessible acreage. 2 years after the seizure, the Pentagon petitioned Congress for the official permission to do what it had already done. Years earlier, the managers of Area 51 forcibly ejected a family from the privately owned mining operation because the mine site had a view of the secret base. The family had owned the mine for nearly 100 years. Both the Utah Ranch and its Colorado counterpart had been vacant for years before the new families moved in. If the military truly wanted the properties, it could have quietly acquired them during those years. It didn't need to produce a special effects extravaganza worthy of Steven Spielberg or George Lucas just to get some ranchers off their land.